Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go on a loaded Friday. Terry Bradshaw is going to stop by today, Blazing 5 Live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, Fox Sports Radio right here at FS1. 1 hour from now, Blazing 5 picks. Like them a lot. It is great to have you in on a Friday. Terry Bradshaw, Doug Flutie stops by today. Can't wait for that. That's in 30 minutes. Joy Taylor's joining me. How are you, Joy? Debate last night at all?
No debate. I'm grateful for that. I was working, so I enjoyed watching the Thursday night football game.
So did I. Actually, it's a weaker division, but that's life. We got a lot of – some divisions are great.
It was a scrappy, fun game, though.
It was. Here's what's interesting. So Carson Wentz once again pulled out the game. You know I love Carson Wentz. And he pulled out the game, and this is all I hear. Well, he wasn't good until the end. That's actually how Tom Brady won 3 of his Super Bowls, you know, being good at the end stuff. Russell Wilson a couple weeks ago played poorly. He was good on one drive of the game, the very last drive. And he beat Minnesota, and he was dubbed amazing. And I love Russell Wilson. Unbelievable. Carson Wentz struggles somewhat early with far less talent, does the same last night in the fourth quarter. He didn't play. He just doesn't play well until the end. The last drive by the Eagles totally encapsulates what the franchise in Philly is and what Wentz is. Let's look at it. First of all, punt return. DeSean Jackson gets hurt. Well, of course DeSean Jackson gets hurt. He's a Philadelphia Eagle wide receiver. So Carson Wentz will not have his most skilled wide receiver for the final drive. All right, he's gone. Later in the drive, Carson Wentz hits Richard Rodgers 2 times. Oh, the great Richard Rodgers, a third string tight end, cut by Washington in September. That's his go-to guy. Yeah, this is go-to guy. This encapsulates what they are. Then, after this, they get down first and goal, and one of his teammates gets caught face masking, hurting Carson Wentz, and now he's got a first and goal at the 18-yard line. Like the percentage to score there, almost none, except he throws a perfect ball to a 5'6 running back, Boston Scott. And you're telling me he's not amazing? Why is every other quarterback in the league a hero when they win a game late? The leading three receivers last night for Philadelphia are Richard Rodgers, cut by Washington in September, Travis Fulgham, released by the Lions last year. Not a good team. The Lions are like, you're not good enough for us. 6th-round pick from Old Dominion. John Hightower, a rookie, a 5th-round rookie from Boise State. And Boston Scott, who was signed off the Saints practice squad 2 years ago. Now, Carson Wentz is not perfect. Holds on to the ball too long, trying to make the big play. And he does throw a lot of jump balls. He throws the ball up for grabs sometimes. A lot of them are caught. But it's amazing. I have watched this kid 4 to 5 to 6 times in the last 10 Eagle games carry a MASH unit. But I always hear that, well, he's not good until the end of the game. He holds the ball too long. It's interesting. Greg Cosell, 41 years, NFL films, compared him to a former NFL player on our show.
Wentz is an interesting player, and I like Carson Wentz, as I know you do. But Carson Wentz, even at his best, he's a certain kind of quarterback. He's not a true precision player. He's a playmaker type quarterback who can make big plays. He will always miss a few. That's the way he plays. I'm not going to compare him to Brett Favre, who's a Hall of Famer, but stylistically, that's what Carson Wentz really is. He's a big play type quarterback.
We loved Brett Favre. We loved Brett Favre. We brag about what Josh Allen could be as a big player. We loved Bradshaw. We love Big Ben. None are precision players. Even Patrick Mahomes is a big play quarterback. We love all of them. except Wentz, who is playing with guys from Old Dominion. He's not perfect, but he's a playmaker, and you've made up your mind. I see this with people in politics. You just make up your mind, and you're not budging. You did this with Andrew Luck, and you've done it with Carson Wentz. Just once, I'd like to see him win a game late, and people go, like Russell Wilson, that's amazing. But like politics, we've all made up our mind, right? Here's Carson after.
The same thing that I echo every game when we're down. Hey, just keep believing. Just one play at a time, and the big play is going to hit. It's going to happen, and John had the big one on that first drive, and obviously Boston the second drive. And guys, just keep believing and keep rallying together, and that's what it's going to take to win a lot of these ball games.
So let's talk about a game this weekend that has the potential to completely change our minds about a team. Now, most of us, we either like teams or don't. And then there's the Raiders. I mean, let's be honest about the Raiders. They've had one winning season in 18 years. Outside of people who love the Raiders, they've been a joke for 18 years. They had one year where Derek Carr won 9 last possession games. They got to the playoffs. He got hurt and they got rolled. They have been a joke for 18 years. They had the worst stadium deal. They had an old owner that was out of touch. They drafted poorly. I mean, around NFL circles, I knew people like reporters, respected reporters, didn't want to go public with it, but they would tell me, like, I don't even cover the Raiders. Like, they just don't know what they're doing. And they didn't say that about Detroit or Cincinnati or Cleveland. They would say, like, the Raiders are not even, they don't even count as an NFL team. They were a mess. We haven't taken seriously for 18 years. But this weekend and this year, they beat Breeze and the Saints already. They beat Mahomes and the Chiefs already. If they beat Brady and the Bucks already, we're going to have to take them seriously. They got a cool new stadium, an iconic coach, a ton of offensive weapons, and a GM that appears, former TV guy, to know what he's doing. It really comes down to this with the Raiders. Do you like Derek Carr? I do, always have. Pro Football Focus came out yesterday. It rated every single NFL quarterback. All things, all stats, all plays. He was 12th. What have I said on this show? Joy is my witness. Derek Carr, to me, is the 12th best quarterback in the NFL. I do these lists from time to time, and that's what he is. For the record, I went and looked it up this morning. Derek Carr, since the start of last season, that's with John Gruden, 32 touchdowns, 9 picks, 71% completion percentage, and 105 quarterback rating. I'm in. I don't think he's Rodgers or Russell. I don't think he's Mahomes or Lamar. I don't think he's quite Big Ben, but he's a top 12 quarterback, and we're going to have to, for the first time in 18 years, take the goofy Raiders. I grew up, you had to take the Raiders seriously. They were a top 3 NFL franchise. They actually remind me a little of the Warriors. When I was a kid growing up, the Warriors were always great, and then they went into a 20-25-year abyss. Now they're a great franchise. New owner, new people running it. The Raiders, if they win this weekend, will have beaten Breeze and Peyton, Andy Reid and Mahomes, Bruce Arians and Tom Brady, and here's John Gruden. Well, he was going to be here, but he's busy preparing for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So Raider Nation gets very feisty because Raider Nation believes everybody's out to bury them, sort of like Cleveland Brown Nation. Everybody's a nation. The media is not picking on anybody. Either you're competent or you're not. And there's been about 7 teams that haven't been very competent for the last 20 years. The Raiders are one, and I think there's a chance. Remember, Raiders off a bye, Buccaneers just came off a huge win over Green Bay. Natural letdown. Keep your eye on the Las Vegas Raiders. A lot of things. So I made predictions. You know, Labor Day was the last chance I could change them on playoff teams, AFC, NFC. We'll check in. I've got one massive miss, 2 potential misses. That's coming up. But first, I think it's official. I think the New York Giants are out of the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes despite losing last night. That's coming up. Terry Bradshaw later, Doug Flutie this hour.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
RecTech, built by grillers, for grillers, stainless steel. Buy that grill, you'll never buy another one. Smart grill technology, RECTEQ.com, RecTech with a Q.com. I actually thought the Giants, many will say, blew an 11-point lead last night late. My takeaway is that was a pretty good loss. I'll give you four or five reasons. I thought Daniel Jones, I know he tripped and fell, but I thought he played pretty good. They have no running game, so it's kind of relying on him to make plays. He did. I think the team totally buys into Joe Judge. How do I know that? Unlike the Cowboys, they get a little bit better every week. They should have won that game last night. They have no running game. They were built around Saquon Barkley. He's out. They had no training camp. So really, September was their training camp. And I look at them and I think they remind me of the Miami Dolphins last year. They're not a great football team, but they're getting better every week. So they clearly buy into the coach. When you're the Cowboys and you don't buy into the coach, you get worse every week. That's what's happening there. The real question is, with this team, after watching him now for a month and a half, is Daniel Jones the guy? And after watching him last night in the loss, my takeaway is, whether he is or not, and I would lean yes, they're too competent not to win two or three more games. They play Dallas again at home. They play the Bengals. They play Washington. They play Philadelphia at home. They're going to win a couple of those games. They've already got one win, should have two. They outplayed the Rams for most of that 3.5 hours. They're a one-win team that's going to finish as a three-win team, maybe more. They're just simply too competent to be in the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes. So that's my takeaway from last night. You may not like to hear that, but we've got teams right now. The Jets are not going to win more than a game, if that. Darnold's back. He maybe wins one or two. The Giants are a better football team, getting better. The Jets are worse, not good anywhere, and playing poor football. The Jags, Washington, and Atlanta. Atlanta just fired everybody. Those teams are really eyeing Trevor Lawrence. It's not like the Giants have a history of bailing on quarterbacks. Eli Manning for years and years threw lots of interceptions. Daniel Jones has lots of fumbles. But he played in a major conference. He's had good quarterback coaches in college and the pros. He's got Jason Garrett, who played the game. He had David Cutcliffe. He appears to be getting better. I thought he was very competent last night to above average. Joe Judge afterwards. I think the Giants are actually, for a losing team, in pretty good shape going forward.
You know, we're putting together a foundation for a team that we hope that lasts, and we play the right type of football for a long time. So we've got a culture being built right now that's moving in the right direction. We got a lot of good football being played. Obviously, we've got to clean up a lot of things. We've eliminated some mistakes and maximize our opportunities, like I've said earlier. But in terms of to the fans, I'm not going to ask to be patient. That's not your job to be patient. Your job is to go ahead and be entertained by us and what we put on the field.
They've lost three games by 12 points. Going forward, they've got three or four games that are absolute losses, three or four go-either-way games, and three or four games, Dallas at home, Philadelphia at home, Washington and the Bengals. I think they can win all four of those. They're competent and getting better. Dallas right now is not competent and getting worse. They'll beat Dallas next time they play them. So I think they're officially out of the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes. You won't have to make that decision. That's now on the Jets. Real tough decision. Jags, easy decision if you get him. In Atlanta, go either way decision. Do you keep Matt Ryan or not? Here's Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
They also had a ton of penalties at the end of the game. Like, it unraveled for the Giants.
Listen, this is what happens to young teams that lose their star player with no training camp and a new head coach. They're going to have these unravel moments. I feel a lot like the Giants that I did with the Dolphins last year, or I do with the Bengals this year. Like, you can lose and be like, no, they're going in the right direction.
Yeah.
You don't have to win games to impress me. The Dolphins this year, you know, they took last year's momentum. Dolphins were 5-4 last nine games. You watch them this year and you're like, oh, this is a potential playoff team. Today they'd be a playoff team.
We're not incredibly patient anymore.
No.
And obviously the Giants should have won that game last night, but that's what happens when you're not completely put together to all of your points there. I think also the penalties just killed them. Yep. A couple of those penalties, Evan Ingram catches that ball, and that's a different conversation this morning.
By the way, Daniel Jones threw the game-winning touchdown. His guy didn't catch it. So again, Daniel Jones was more than competent last night.
So the Patriots fell to 2-3 after a poor performance from Cam Newton against the Broncos last week. He was barely able to practice in the 2 weeks leading up to the game, but he's not making any excuses and is taking blame for the team's recent struggles.
Just haven't been good. And I haven't matched enough good plays together for my liking. And that's what it comes down to. And I know what I'm capable of, and my standard is extremely high, and I haven't been meeting it, my personal standard. So that's how I feel.
This feels like a big game for the Patriots.
Oh, it feels like. I think it feels huge for Cam, because Cam's great game when we all bought in with Seattle. But now you look at Seattle, and it's like, okay, Ryan Fitzpatrick threw for 300 yards against Seattle. Matt Ryan threw for 450 yards. Kirk Cousins had a 93 passer. Dak threw for 427 yards. Everybody's kind of been good against Seattle. So now it's like, okay, I need a second game. And San Francisco, I know they lost Bosa. And I know their defensive front's not as good. But Joy, I just looked this morning. They're still a top five defense. Like, let's not pretend San Francisco doesn't have most of their Super Bowl roster from last year.
Yeah.
When Garoppolo's healthy, I think they're going to beat New England this weekend. I think San Francisco is a real team.
Well, they just beat the Rams 24-16, which obviously that's what they do, is right. Beat the Rams. But this feels like a really big game for the Patriots for the season. Now, obviously, it's the 49ers, and they could still obviously win the division depending on how things go with the Bills. But after losing Cam for that week and then the performance with the Broncos, it just feels like they need this game to get back on the momentum that they were on at the beginning of the season. Obviously, they already have a losing record. I'm with you. I think the 49ers win this game, but it is at the Patriots, so there's some travel involved. I just think this is a must-win situation for the Patriots. So Antonio Brown's 8-game suspension is coming to an end soon, and if he gets another chance in the NFL, Russell Wilson thinks Seattle would be a great fit.
From the conversations I've had with him, he's really been remorseful and just, he's been humbled, along the way. I think that, with our culture, I can speak though is on us, and how our culture is. I think, with Coach Carroll, I think with the teammates that we have, the men that we have and the growth, I think it's, if he does play football, I think this is a great place for, if he does play again, I think this is a place that he'll grow a lot as a man too as well.
I do think that Seattle has a good culture, which I think would be necessary to bring in someone like Antonio Brown.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good locker room.
Yes. I don't trust it at this point. Like, is he going to end up somewhere? Yes, he is, because he's that kind of talent, and this is a competitive industry.
Here's what worries me. So Pittsburgh's a really well-run operation. Right. It unraveled. Then he eventually went to New England. Really good operation. It unraveled. So it's not like he's been like with the Lions. Now, it did unravel with the Raiders, and I can be more cynical of that.
Yeah, but I also felt like the Raiders did everything they could to support him. Like it was a situation where I was really picking sides there. Like, he was traded, and then you remember he had the blisters on his feet because of the chirotherapy and couldn't practice, and then there was the helmet situation, and then there was the altercation with Mike Mayock, and then the recording of the private conversation with John Gruden. And then he demanded his release after the team voided his guaranteed money. So there was just like thing after thing after thing. I'm with you. The Raiders is kind of an isolated situation where things could be considered dysfunctional. But there's no excuse for the Steelers, and there's no excuse for the Patriots. Like, those are two of the best run organizations in the league. And even though I do think Seattle is very well run, it's like, what is the cost benefit of this situation? If he comes in and he does what he's supposed to do and does his job and doesn't cause any drama, then that's a great situation, right? But we've seen that's not what tends to happen. Now, I understand Russell Wilson has spoken with him, and he's said he's humbled, and I need to see it. But if I was a general manager, it's not worth it to me.
One of the things with Antonio Brown that did him no good was his social media accounts. I almost think if I signed him, I'd say, okay, you're off those.
Whoever signs him, if I was to sign him, it's a zero tolerance policy for everything. Like, there's no social media during the season.
None.
I don't want to hear about like advertisements and all that. Like, you cannot use your social media during the season at all. Like, one tweet and you're like, that's it.
No.
I'm not dealing with any kind of drama whatsoever if you're going to come in, because why I'm the one taking all the risk in the situation.
Right.
So yeah, that to me like is non-negotiable. Le'Veon Bell is trying to make a good impression on his new Chiefs teammates, and he started with his fellow running back, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Mm. Offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy revealed that Le'Veon made an effort to connect with Edwards-Helaire before he even signed with the team.
Le'Veon reached out to Clyde and had a conversation with him and asked him, you know, and told him basically, I don't want to step on your toes, you know, which I want to know if you're okay with me coming in here. And he's a classy individual. It says a lot about the person who does not want to come up and disrupt the chemistry that we have.
I think it does say a lot about Le'Veon.
I didn't like when he went on Facebook in a locker room, though.
That was Antonio Brown.
Was that Antonio Brown?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't love the way, I thought he made a poor decision leaving Pittsburgh. But if you go back and look at every single comment and tweet Le'Veon Bell did with the Jets, he always said, it's a businessman, I'm here to help. Most guys that are trouble are fairly called trouble. They're labeled trouble. Le'Veon Bell, to me, has always been almost aloof, where it's like, it's a business. He doesn't love football perhaps as much as we want our players to love it, but he's never been disruptive to me.
No.
Adam Gase, another star he just didn't like.
I think he's going to have a lot of success with Kansas City, which is going to be another bad mark on Adam Gase. But the Steelers situation, I can't really fault him, even though I think that that was the best place for him. I can't fault anybody who wants to bet on themselves and wants to maximize their money. And if that's how you want to handle it, like, it's your career, no one's going to tell us how to run our careers, do what you want. I just think that the Steelers was the best situation for him. But similarly, I think Kansas City is a great situation for him at this point in his career. And him coming into what's obviously a good culture, he knows this move going in. Like, he had options, obviously, and wanted to come into a situation where he feels comfortable. He's not disrupting anything. And he has self-awareness, which is what I appreciate the most about Le'Veon Bell. He didn't have to do this. He didn't have to call Clyde Edwards-Helaire and ask him, you know, what the situation is. And he doesn't want to disrupt anything. So I'm really interested to see how this works with Le'Veon and the Chiefs.
Good stuff, Joy. Taylor with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Okay, we are a third through the NFL season. Actually, slightly above a third through the NFL season. And so I'm going to go in 10 minutes, and we're going to check in on my predictions. But first, I'm so excited because I'm not sure if I've ever talked to Doug Flutie before. But I got into this thing. I started talking about this earlier this week. And I said, everybody in life, it doesn't matter if it's football or not, needs a kingmaker. Somebody to believe in you. I had a couple executives early in my career. They believed in me, or I wouldn't be here. I'd be bouncing around in local radio. And I said, Kyler Murray doesn't fit the prototypical NFL quarterback. Runs too much, a little shorter. But somebody, Cliff Kingsbury, bought into him. Said, I trust him. I'm here for his growth and development. And everybody tries to compare Kyler Murray to a lot of different people. And I'm like, he's not Russell Wilson. He's Doug Flutie. The difference is nobody ever put their arms around Doug in the NFL. He was a great high school player. Like Kyler, he won the Heisman. He was a finalist 2 years. Then he goes to the CFL. He's their greatest player ever. Then he goes to the NFL. I think he's 21-9 in Buffalo, and they're just trying to replace him. But remember, we didn't have Russell Wilson then. Russell Wilson, I believe, got Kyler drafted high and got Baker Mayfield drafted high. And I think if Doug Flutie came out today with his credentials and his talent, I think Doug Flutie would be a first-round pick. I absolutely do. He was an 11th-round pick. And I just think it just goes to show sometimes you need an example in a big business where everybody goes, oh, Russell Wilson, runaround guy. Oh, that works. And I think Russell's gotten a lot of guys drafted. Maybe Fran Tarkenton. Like, there wasn't somebody out there championing in. And he's going to join. Yeah, there you go. He's going to join. He played, by the way, 12 years in the NFL. It's not like he didn't play, and he was winning wherever he went. He could win games, and Doug Flutie is now joining us. 21 years as a professional football player, 12 in the NFL. He was the NFL Comeback Player of the Year. He made a Pro Bowl. And, you know, it's interesting, Doug, because we were talking this week, and I started talking about you. And some people on my staff are like 25 years old, and I'm like, oh, you didn't see Doug Flutie play. I'm like, Doug Flutie was a pain in the butt. But I did say this, Doug. I said, I never felt that you had a franchise that said, this is our guy, 5 years, go. Is that fair? Did you feel a little bit like that?
No doubt about it. I felt that way. I bounced around so much. I was learning new offenses and always trying to, you had, and I always said this about the smaller quarterback and Kyler and everybody else. You have to prove you can do it from the pocket and prove that you can do it their way. Then they start to let go of the reins and you open up and you just start playing. And for me, it was, you know, what we did in Canada. I ran spread offenses, used the quarterback as a runner. We did all the things that the NFL is doing today,
yeah,
which allows some of the athletic, smaller quarterbacks to have success.
Yeah. You know, it is. Russell Wilson's a fascinating player because he got drafted in the third round. Think about this, Doug. Russell Wilson was great at North Carolina State. His coach told him, we're not going to start you your last year. He has to it's insane. He has to transfer to Wisconsin. Now, I do believe, in my mind, the greatest under 6 foot quarterback of my lifetime, and you're in a class of it, is Russell Wilson. When you first saw Russell Wilson play, what was your initial reaction, even in college?
I actually talked to Dana Bible, who was his offensive coordinator at NC State, when he was leaving and looking for Wisconsin. Oh, I got in touch with Russell and talked a little bit. My first reaction was, here's a small guy with a big-time arm. And that's what separates the guys that are successful at the NFL level. There are a lot of athletic college quarterbacks that don't make it in the NFL because they didn't have the arm. Russell has – he throws the deep ball better than anybody right now.
Yeah.
He puts – you know, he drops it in the bucket. To be accurate 40 yards down the field, usually to put it where you want, you put a little zip on it and it's just got that little arc. He lays it up over the top and lays it in there like nobody I've ever seen and gives this guy the chance. So his deep ball and then his athleticism, he's so athletic and people don't really – he's not Kyler Murray and he's not Lamar Jackson shifty, but he's still making people miss and running. It doesn't like jump out at you like it does them, but he still does all that. And he throws the ball down the field, which I love.
You know, it's interesting. And this is just always the case that we pick people that we like and we defend them to the core. And then we decide on certain people we don't like. And I look at Carson Wentz, and there's a little Favre. He's a playmaker. He's playing with third-string people. But we've made our mind up as a nation. Well, you know, Wentz is hot and cold. Well, God, Brett Favre was totally in – Joe Namath was a hot and cold quarterback. I love Wentz, but I feel like, because Nick Foles won a Super Bowl in Philly, the country's decided, Foles is better. I watch Wentz, and I'm amazed at his talent. What do you see?
I see the same thing. I see the talent, the last touchdown pass, and a play during that drive where he drifted to the right. But watch him step up through the pocket on this touchdown pass. He steps up through on the move. This is the one I really liked that made a big difference in that drive. But for the touchdown pass, he steps up through. He's not even set. And he throws a laser on the move, God, right over the shoulder, perfect ball position. And I was, you know, the talent level, the arm talent, I hate that phrase, arm talent, but he's got a tremendous arm. He runs into trouble making mistakes, trying to make a play when it's not there, forcing the issue, has some bad turnovers. But I have more than my share of those.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's a fair criticism. He does, there's a little hero ball from time to time. By the way, that was the knock on Favre. It was a completely fair criticism of Brett Favre. And for the record, Wentz has a big arm. Favre had a big arm. Namath had a big arm. When you have a huge arm, psychologically, you feel like maybe, Doug, you can squeeze a ball in.
Oh, you're trying to do things. You know, I remember that about Elway. Elway throwing like deep in routes. He would just wait, hitch, and say, screw it, it's coming, and just drill that laser in that time. You know, they decide I can make this throw, and the problem is they make it often enough that they try it a little too often. I never had that arm, so I didn't run into that problem. I ran into the problem just trying to avoid all the time and making throws, you know, from whatever arm angle and all that. But when you have that big arm, sometimes it's most of the time it's a blessing.
You know, it is. You played 21 years of professional football and 12 in the NFL, and you didn't always have great offensive lines. When you look at Brady, and he's still very good, obviously. Mm-hmm. When you look at Brady in the longevity, how much of it is luck?
Staying healthy is lucky. I mean, but I go back to the year that Tom did get hurt. Both his backups got hurt in a week or two. Part of Tom, it was like both of them got banged up. Tom, by being so smart and cerebral and knowing how to get rid of the ball, knowing his read, knowing his hots, moving protections, has kept himself healthy because of his head. He's quick with the release. He makes his decisions. The ball's out. The guys that get hurt are indecisive, hanging in the pocket. All of a sudden, they get lit up and driven to the ground and all that. So while my longevity was because I was athletic enough to make people miss, Tom's is because he has the ability to read coverage so quickly, know when he's protected, when he isn't, make those quick decisions and the ball out. And that's so much a part of it. He makes his offensive lines better because he's always putting them in the right protection, always sliding the line to the blitz, sliding it to the premier pass rusher, doing those things at the line of scrimmage that a quarterback needs to do to make sure he's protected.
I've always had this theory. I wrote about it once in a book that I believe there's a reason it should be linear. You should go and see a five-star high school quarterback. He goes to Alabama, USC, and then he goes to the NFL, but it doesn't work that way. Is that what happens is most of the star quarterbacks in this league, at one point North Carolina State had three or four. You went to Boston College. Tom Brady is one of the only remaining national football powers that's a quarterback. Now, Joe Burrow's from LSU. But it is remarkable there's not a single NFL quarterback starting that's an elite player from Ohio State. Sam Darnold's struggling USC. And my theory was this. My theory is if when you go to a Boston College or an NC State or a Cal, you do not play with NFL players and you learn toughness, you get hit more, you learn how you have a resolve about you because you go to USC, Matt Leinart got hit 11 times his last year there. And that's my theory on this league is that one of the things that's key to this league, you get the you-know-what kicked out of you a little bit in college. That Big Ben, Miami of Ohio. What do you think about my crazy theory?
I like it. I think part of it is you have, being from a smaller school, you have a chip on your shoulder, and it keeps you driven on a daily basis to be better. And like you said, you've got to do more with less at the early levels. So you're being creative. You're carrying a team on your shoulders. You know what that's about. You know that they're looking to you to make the difference in a game. And then all of a sudden, when I played with Eric Moulds in Buffalo, it was like I'd never had a receiver with that kind of ability. Never. I had never seen anything like that. And, all of a sudden you're playing with guys that all you got to do is get the ball in their hands and they're making plays and your role gets pulled back a little, which is, you don't have to do the run all over the field, Kyler Murray thing and Lamar Jackson thing to win.
Right.
You've got those guys out here. It's my job now to distribute the ball, get it in their hands.
Finally, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask Doug Flutie this. Is the happiest I've ever seen Bill Belichick was not after winning a Super Bowl. It was not. And you've been asked about this before. It was the drop kick play. I'm going to show it, explain it. I've never seen Bill happier than this play. Take us to it.
Originally, Chris Berman's idea. Bill came to me and we did this. So the snap comes. We had to pretend we were going for two or else they were going to rush this thing and block it. So we were faking it. When I came over to the sideline, and I went to Bill. First of all, I blew off Tom Brady on a high five to get to Bill and didn't realize it. Then I got to Bill, and of course, he's not the most touchy-feely guy in the world, so he gives the awkward hug. But I tell you, it was so much fun. See how the pass rush didn't really push in the middle?
Yeah.
All the guys up front were having that conversation. Lonnie Paxson, long snapper, talking to Keith Traylor, don't blow me up here. This is good. Watch this. This is going to be fun. Check this out. And I think Jason Taylor was the only guy that actually rushed the kick off the edge.
And Joy Taylor's brother, Jason Taylor. By the way, today is Doug Flutie's birthday. He's got a podcast called The Quarterback Corner. Matt Schaub, good dude, is his co-host. Happy birthday to you. This has been an absolute pleasure for me. You're a good sport doing this because we saw that play this week and we watched Kyler Murray and I'm like, we got to get Doug Flutie on the show and you were kind enough to do it. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. I root for all the undersized quarterbacks, so I love Kyler. Root for them all.
Thank you, Doug.
Take care.
Blazing 5, top of the hour, coming up next. We check in on my preseason predictions. We're a third the way through the NFL season. How bad, how close, how right have I been?
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Want to know what's really scary? Seeing how much you could save on car insurance by switching to GEICO. It's almost as scary as watching your dog growl at the wall and realize he sees something you don't. Go to geico.com. See that thing I posted the other day on TikTok, that scary little video? It was so funny.
You didn't get that from me?
No, I didn't. I thought it was so funny.
I retweeted it. I thought that you saw it on my page. I was going to try and get you, but then I saw you tweeted it. So I was going to, like, in the break, you watch it.
It scared me.
I wanted to record your reaction. I just scared everyone. This is incredible. It's so scary.
So, I do Blazing 5 every week. Those are individual picks. Not having a great year, that's top of the hour. But what I take more pride in, actually, is making my preseason predictions. I make them in, like, June, July, and then I get a couple times to tweak them after camp. We didn't have training camp. We didn't have it. So here are my official predictions, and where are we right now? So let's start with the AFC. I predicted the Bills, Ravens, Colts, Chiefs would win their division. I predicted wild card, the Browns, Titans, and Steelers would be wild card teams. So right now, all of those are in play. Oh, I'm 7-7. Now, it should be noted, the Titans absolutely look better than the Colts. I'm probably going to be wrong, but I still think the Colts can make the playoffs. And the Steelers, this is still in play, do look like the best team in that division. But so far, I'm 7-7, on playoff teams. Now, let's go to the NFC. It's a little dicier. I had the Eagles, the Vikings. Yeah, it was a whiff there. That's my big whiff. Eagles, Vikings, Saints, 49ers winning their division. Then the Packers, Tampa Bay, and the Seahawks being wild card teams. So where are we right now? All right, well, Seahawks, Bucks, Eagles, Packers, I'm good. Obviously, now the Bears and Rams play this weekend. One of them's going to be a fraud after the weekend. A little bit. I will say this. This is a big game for the Rams because I think Chicago defensively and coaching, Rams is a big weekend. Rams, Monday Night Football, get Chicago at home. If they don't win this game, you can kind of bail on them. They can't beat the good teams. So I also had right now, I'm okay. Arizona, Rams, Bears would be teams I did not predict. So there we are. I will say this, though. Now, I whiffed totally on the Vikings. Total, utter whiff. In fact, they're selling off parts now and getting draft picks. So I just whiffed. The other two that I clearly didn't feel as good about, Pittsburgh and Chicago. Chicago's next three are the Rams, the Saints, and the Titans. I think they're going to go 0-3. That's my gut feeling. So I think I don't think I'm wrong on the Bears. I think the truth will come out about the Bears is they really don't have enough juice offensively to keep winning the way they're winning. Now, let's get to the Steelers. Well, you really didn't like the Steelers. Well, let's just say this. My Steeler predictions were based on two things. Number one, Lamar, Jackson, and Baltimore appeared to be getting better, and Cleveland was going to be way better. They had a good draft and good free agency. So I thought the division was going to be tougher. Also, Big Ben off an injury. I was very much a cynic on that. He's played very well. Also, I had no idea that Chase Claypool would be this good. He's been a shocking talent. But I will say this. Be very careful about the Steelers. Now, the Steelers' wins this year are against the Giants, Denver, Texans, Eagles, Browns. That's a bunch of nonsense, mostly. The next 2 weeks, at Tennessee and at Baltimore. Now, I do think they have a real good shot to win both those games. But I will acknowledge here, Pittsburgh and the Bears, I think I'll be proven right on the Bears and probably proven wrong on the Steelers. I was absolutely, utterly wrong on the Minnesota Vikings. I can totally take that. But our predictions were not that far off. Colts are not quite as good as I thought, but they're fine. And Tennessee's better than I thought. We'll find out this weekend when they play Pittsburgh. So there we are. I feel pretty good about where we're at. What's your biggest shock this year so far?
I missed on the Vikings, too. It's not that I thought the Packers were going to be bad. I just thought that everything that was going on in the offseason was going to bring them down a little bit. And because I loved the Packers last year. But, yeah, the Vikings have been
awful.
A disaster.
And for the record, what I always love about NFL predictions, if I would have said before the season started, Vikings will be out of it by week 6, you'd get nothing but hate mail.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Even though we know every year there is at least one, usually two teams that were playoff teams that implode. And we also know there's a bad team that usually shocks us. Remember, San Francisco before last season was a mess.
Yep.
And I called San Francisco last year. I said they'll double their win total. And people are like, whoa, Garoppolo's no good. They end up leading the Kansas City Chiefs in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl for a while.
Yeah, I also did not predict the Texans falling apart the way that they did as
Who's
well.
Who's that?
The Texans. I didn't think they were going to fall apart that
quickly.
Yeah,
that's it. Brutal schedule, injuries, Bill O'Brien, there you go. Blazing 5 is right around the corner on a Friday. Terry Bradshaw, Eric Mangini, too, Bucky Brooks, Jason McIntyre. Don't give up. Feel more energized, strong, driven, lean. Visit mdriveformen.com today. I take a supplement every morning.